Okay. Let's begin today's sermon then. As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's Dhamma. Let us take a moment to reflect on this opportunity that we have been gifted. This is the reward of merits that we have accumulated throughout this infinitely long journey in samsara. This is a blessing, this is a reward, this is the opportunity that we have all been waiting for. That is to be presented with the Lord Buddha's teaching, to have the association of the Mahasangha, to help us, guide us, and to see us through our liberation. So as we embark on this opportunity, let us all first take a moment to pledge our allegiance to the Lord Buddha, who we wholeheartedly and single-mindedly accept and embrace as our teacher, our master, our charioteer, our shepherd, he who guides us, he who leads us, he who has shown us the path, the supremely enlightened one, the perfect one, the magnificent one, the gracious one, the merciful one. Let us all be upstanding then and take a moment to recite the Dhira Samikata Moha stanzas and to take a solemn vow to pledge our allegiance as disciples, lifelong disciples of the Lord Buddha.
Dhirasya vigata mohasya abhinnakhilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya buddhasilasya sadhupanyasya vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavato tasya savakohamasmi akatankatissa tusitasya vantalokamisasya muditasya katasamanasya manujasya antimasarirasya narasya anopamasya virajasya bhagavato tasya savakohamasmi asansayasya kulasya venaikasya sarativarasya anuttarasya ruchiradhammasya nikhankhasya abhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavato tasya savakohamasmi.
And this week I'm going to introduce you to the next stanza in the sutta.
Nisabhasya appameyasya gambhirasya munapattasya khemankarasya vedasya dhammatthasya sanguttatasya sangatigasya muttasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi. Misabhasya appameyasya gambhirasya munapattasya කේමංකරස්ස වේදස්ස ධම්මට්ඨස්ස සංවුතත්තස්ස සංගාතිගස්ස මුත්තස්ස භගවතෝ තස්ස ශාවකෝහමස්මි. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස.
Let us now take a moment to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts before we go on to invite the divine celestial beings and commence today's sermon. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ. Pānātipātā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Adinnādānā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. සුරාමේරය මජ්ජපමාදට්ඨාන වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි. තිසරණේන සද්ධින් පංචශීලං ධම්මං සාදුකං සුරක්ඛිතං කତ୍වා අප්පමාදේන සම්පාදේත.
Okay, you may all now be seated. Also, before we begin today's sermon, let us take a moment. Having reflected on how fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Buddha's teaching, to be presented with the Four Noble Truths, the only truth that really exists, the Absolute Truths, let us remind ourselves that in this long journey that we have come in samsara, there have been countless beings who will have come to our rescue, been at our beck and call to help, support and assist us. They are those who might have sacrificed themselves for our betterment, for our protection, for our well-being and to safeguard us. Today they may be destitute in samsara, hopeless, helpless. Therefore, as grateful people, it is our duty, our obligation, our responsibility to extend the Dhamma to them, to extend this gift which excels all gifts. It is our opportunity to repay the debts that we owe them. And so, as I now make an invitation out to all of them, wherever they may be in this 10,000 world systems, to come along to witness this meritorious deed, I want you all to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds out to all of them. Invite them to join us. Invite them wholeheartedly, with compassion, and with gratitude. Invite them to join us to witness this meritorious deed, to acquire merits in the hope that if any of them have today been born in woeful planes, that such merits may help them to be born in the blissful plane, and for all beings who are in the blissful plane to be able to listen to this teaching of the Buddha, understand and comprehend it, and in the hope that they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So as I now make this invitation, I ask you all to extend that invite out to all of them. May they join us, may they rejoice in these merits, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajas sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta.
And before we begin, let us also take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Triple Gem, from the Noble Ones. For we may have committed offenses, such as insulting them, disregarding them, and reviling them. The consequences of such actions, whenever we might have done them in this journey of samsara, the consequences of such actions may be that today, as we make efforts to proceed and make progress on our path, these efforts become incredibly difficult. So, before we begin then, let us all take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Ones, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, Anagamis, Sakradagamis, Sotapannas, be they on the path of having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasane, for any thoughts, words or actions of revile, desecration, slander or insult that we might have directed towards them. Either knowingly or unknowingly, may the Aryans find compassion within them to forgive us. And as you take a moment to seek that forgiveness, I remind you all to make a firm resolve to never conduct yourself in such manner henceforth. And finally, let us make a firm resolve, may through the course of this sermon we be able to understand the teachings of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths. May we be able to unveil the ignorance which has thus far kept us in the lurch of suffering, and once and for all break free from this cell that we have forever been incarcerated in. May we be able to break free from the four great hells once and for all by achieving the noble state of Sotapanna. And for any among you who may have already achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that firm resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. Okay. Now, it is indeed obvious that we haven't met each other in a long time. We haven't spoken with each other. You haven't come talk to me about how you're progressing on the path, what obstacles are in your way, how you're managing yourself, your time, your commitments. You haven't had a chance, aside from the emails and various other letters you sent through with questions in them, you haven't had another opportunity or any other opportunity to clarify various aspects of the Dhamma and its application in life. And as time progresses, it may be that you begin to feel that you're losing hope. It may be that you feel this way, not for any other reason, but perhaps, as we talked about last week, when is this going to end? The further we spend away from the monastery, the further we spend away from the Sangha, the more we distance ourselves from the path. Is it going to be difficult for us to start to make progress again? Are we taking backward steps now? How do I gauge myself? Where am I going? Am I doing well enough? Is this good? Do I need to do any better? Where am I getting stuck? Who's there to guide me? Who's there to oversee me? To dispel my doubts? To show me the path? And various other questions may pop into your mind from time to time. And this is why I feel that sometimes, perhaps one or two among you may feel a tiny bit hopeless or perhaps helpless. Maybe not in a very strong way, maybe not fiercely, but perhaps a tiny bit. Just kind of a feeling of melancholy and a feeling of, would I ever be able to get back to where I was on this path? For those of you, let me reassure you something. I want you to listen to this very well. Pay attention, because I'm addressing a problem that you may have had by now, or perhaps a problem that you may come across in future, or a problem that you have at the moment. So let me reassure you. Folks, I am just like you. My origins are very modest, just as they are for you. I started in a lay life. I knew no different. What I saw, I accepted as the truth. What I heard, what I sensed from the outside world, this is what I saw as being the truth. All the people that were around me, they indoctrinated me. Seldom did I come across someone who was able to, at least who tried to, put me on the right track in terms of Nibbana. I was surrounded, I am grateful for, as I recall this, by good people, kind people, generous people, but they were still people of the world. They were not people who had realized Nibbana. They were not people who had realized that even good is not enough. It's not enough to be good. So I spent my time among people like that. So why am I recalling this? The reason I'm recalling this is because it may be that our particular circumstances are different. Right? It may be that you work in a different sector to which I did. Perhaps it may be that your family organization makeup is different to that in which I was. It may be that our particular circumstances are different, or yours is different to what mine was. However, all things considered, we all came from the same place. The old expression goes, it takes one to know one. You'll all have heard that. It takes one to know one. And this is true. I'm reassuring you here, folks, that the reason I know you, the reason that when you listen to a sermon and you hear the voice of the Swami Mohan say, and you begin to wonder, sometimes amazed, how come the things he's saying, how come these examples, these situations that he's talking about, it's as if he saw me doing them. It's as if he was stood there observing me while I was doing them. How come he can, is he reading my mind? People have come up to me and said similar things. So I mean, say that sermon, I'm amazed. Did you read my mind? The answer is, it takes one to know one. I can't read minds. I can read my own mind. I know that we both come from the same place. I'm just like you. We are not different, folks. The vicissitudes of life that come your way came my way and still do, to more or less an extent. But we are from the same boat. We share similar stories. I have shared my life story with you. Everything I can remember, I have shared with you. With all its ups and downs, I have shared all those stories with you. The good times and the bad, the interesting times and the boring times, the fun times from the sad times. I've shared all that with you. So, in those stories, did you not see yourself? Perhaps the reason that you continue to listen to these sermons is because you see a resemblance between your story and the story of the Swami Mansi. How is it that from those modest beginnings, from a modest upbringing, from very modest roots, we are where we are today? So I know what it feels like to be you. I know what it feels like to be in your situation. And, you know, I feel sometimes very grateful for that. I don't mean that I feel I'm lucky to have spent a lay life or a family life, having worked and so on and so forth. No, that was a life I feel lucky to have left behind. I'm glad that I left it behind and it couldn't have come sooner. However, I am grateful from another aspect. And that aspect is the fact that I can talk to you like this quite openly, plenty of times when I give you examples. Have I not asked you the question, how do I know this? And then I see a smile appear on your face. And then you know, aha, see, Swami Nivas is not talking about us, he's talking about himself. Yes, But as I talk about myself, am I also not talking about you? What do you think gives me the right to talk to you in the way I do? You know, someone who is very new to these sermons might listen to a sermon, and in fact, I feel that sometimes maybe when you share these links and sermons with other people, those who haven't listened to these sermons, you're very careful, aren't you? To make sure that the sermon you give out is not one that has a lot of telling off, someone that doesn't put them off immediately, a sermon that helps them to, first of all, it has to be a sermon that helps them to, first of all, build some Shraddha within them before they get into the bones of it. Right? Are you not careful like that? I've seen people make comments, these sermons are quite stern, some people might say. When Swaminarayana sees a weakness, he'll attack it like a ferocious lion. I do indeed. I'm unforgiving when it comes to raga, dvesha, moha, because I like to be merciful. I mean, that has to be the nature of mercy, don't you think so? You recall from last week I said, are you listening to these sermons, or do you walk up to a Swaminarayana to have him say nice, lovely things about you? Or do you walk up to a Swaminarayana like you walk up to a doctor? After all, the Mahasangha are doctors. The Buddha is the greatest doctor we've ever had. The great master, he's the doctor. So, his disciples, and this includes you as well. If the moment you become part of the Sangha, not necessarily the Mahasangha, but the Sangha, Atta Purusa Puggala, the moment you enter the Sangha, you also become a doctor. So I want to reassure you folks that I feel privileged in some senses, and I feel that you have given me the right to talk to you in this manner because we share a similar story. I know what it's like to be you. I have had ups and downs in my life just as much as you have. I can talk about my own stories, my own experiences, examples from my own life, and I can be pretty sure that the majority of you, the vast majority of you, will have had either exactly the same or similar stories, situations in your life. And I feel that that is a great, it's a fantastic opportunity for all of us. So, what am I reassuring you here about? What I'm reassuring you here is, don't despair that you are not able to come to the monastery these days, or that you're not able to walk up to a Swaminarayana, sit down and go through with him the various questions that trouble you, the various issues that bother you, and whether you're doing the things correctly, provided you're doing the best you can. As I said one day, I only expect the best you can, not the worst of what you can't. I only expect the best of what you can. Provided you are doing the best of what you can, folks, don't despair. Take this in the right sense. Don't read too much into this. But I can feel you. Again, I remind you, I can't read minds. Right? I can't read minds. I don't know what you're doing right now, so don't worry. I don't know whether what you're doing as you listen to the sermon. That's why I sometimes speak to you in a little bit of a stern voice, just asking you, are you really paying attention to the sermon, or have you got your phone in your hand? In your hand, I do ask you that sometimes. You know this, right? But the reason that I feel that you have given me the right to speak to you like this is because we come from similar backgrounds. I know what it's like to be you. I know what it's like to have a family. to have parents who may be both supportive or unsupportive. I know what it's like to be married. One thing I don't know is what it's like to have children, but I learned that after I became a monk. No, I don't have children now, per se, but there are lots of young monks at the monastery to whom we try our best to provide caring affection that they once received from their biological parents, but in a way that their biological parents could never provide them. Again, similar story for me. They provided me with shelter, food, lodgings, clothing, education, but what they couldn't provide me was an affection that was based in non-desire. That they couldn't afford me because they didn't know what non-desire was. They didn't know how to achieve that. So, perhaps I could say that in just the same way that we look after our young monks at the monastery like our own children, in the same way today, I am having to look after my parents like my own children. And the same goes for you all as well. So, don't despair, I repeat myself, because I want you all to understand that although you are not here at the monastery, although you don't get to come on a Thursday or a Wednesday or a Saturday or the regular Sundays, you know, I can feel you. That is why you might wonder how the tone of the sermons change from time to time. One week Swami Nwanze goes very deep into the Dhamma points, and then for a few weeks he'll talk about just general advice. And sometimes he's very critical about some things. Then he goes on to appreciate the people that we come across in society. He asks us to worship our parents, and he reminds us about their greatness, and then about our teachers, and how to be kind and generous and helpful to others. How to be merciful to others. How the tone of these sermons can change just like that. One week to the next, it can change. And that is because, as I say, I can feel you. It's not that I feel each of you individually. That's not the way it works. And I don't know how it happens. Partly I can say that this is the nature of vipaka, which if we have some time we may talk about today. This is the nature of vipaka. Right? When we do merits, our vipakas bring us what we deserve. Not what we need, what we deserve. Not what we want even, what we deserve. That is what vipakas do. That is what merits do rather. The more merits you do, the more these sermons, as you listen to them, you will feel, good heavens, is he reading my mind? That is so spooky. The more you will feel that way. So the last thing you should do the moment you feel that is not to stop listening to the sermon. Is it maybe because I'm connected on YouTube? Maybe that's how he's reading me? No, that's the last thing you ought to do. Stop listening to the sermon. It's the last thing you ought to do. If you feel that way, that is because you are blessed with the merits that you have done. It's not my blessing per se. It's not anyone's blessing as such. It is the merits that you have done. So, what I'm saying is, I think, although you are all at home these days and have very little opportunity to actually step outside, I feel I'm right to make the assumption that most of you are actually actively engaging in as much merits as you possibly can. I just feel that. That has to be true. That is why I sense you. So what must you do? Continue with those merits. Because what the merits will do is it will bring you what you deserve. It will bring you what you deserve. You know, since the pandemic started, the very next Sunday, since we decided to self-quarantine the monastery, the very next Sunday we were able to bring you this sermon. So the thought popped into our minds, hey, why don't we just stream the sermon online and live so that our listeners can still listen in and they can join and they can really, you know, connect with us. There was not a second thought about that. There were no ifs and there were no buts. Ever since then, these sermons have continued, and long may they continue. For as long as you will be doing merits, they will continue, and perhaps other opportunities will open for you to receive what you deserve. That is the way it works. So once again, if there are any among you who feel, you know, this is becoming difficult, I've been meaning to get back to the monastery, but it's just not working. Is this going to work out? You know, I thought I was going to embark on the journey to Nibbana. I mean, and particularly, I think, you know, speaking to a lot of our English sermon-only audience, the reason I make mention to you, folks, is because I think I'm right in saying that perhaps there'll be quite a few among you, maybe just short of the majority, who may not have had the opportunity to listen to the Dhamma, to embrace the Dhamma, to really connect with the Dhamma until you got to listen to these sermons in English, in a way that you could understand, in a way that you could relate to them. It may be that you tried listening to the sermons in Sinhala, for those of you who have some familiarity in Sinhala, but there are quite a lot of you whose native tongue is English. But some of you, although maybe Sri Lankan born, have trouble with Sinhalese, and maybe it is that you had an upbringing in which the Dhamma was not an intricate part of your life, that was not introduced to you until late in your life, and then one fine day, because you obviously had no interest in the Dhamma, and also, I'd assume again that quite a few of you would have had a very privileged upbringing. I don't think I'm wrong there. Maybe not all of you, but quite a few of you will have had a privileged upbringing. Right? So, affluent in many ways. You got what you wanted. You had the things you want in life. So, on most occasions, anytime you wanted something, it was there. Or you could easily achieve it. It would come your way. You had the connections, you knew the people, you knew the places, you could afford them. But life was on your side, one could say. But now I think you'll look back and you look back at the life that you spent, and you might even wonder, heavens, I wasted my merits. That was not what I needed my merits for. Not to have been able to go out every night for dinner. That's, alas, all my merits were spent in such things, in the pursuit of sensual desires and sensual pleasures. Only now do I realize that, what I need merits for, what I really need merits for. That's fine, you know, everyone has a moment of realization, and it doesn't come any sooner. That's the way it is. That is the way it works. Have you never wondered to yourself, if only I got this before, if only I had this opportunity 6 months ago, well, why did it not come 6 months ago? It doesn't work like that, you see. Everything has a time, everything has a place. And when you got to listen to the Dhamma was when you were due to listen to the Dhamma. Where you got to listen to the Dhamma was where you were due to listen to the Dhamma. That time and place was decided, determined by the merits that you'd done. So it came at the right time. I don't think it came at the wrong time for any of you. How do we know? Well, you were still alive, weren't you? Any of you were dead when you got to listen to the Dhamma? I know, that's a silly question. So you all got the Dhamma at the right time. And you know, I have seen in the audience that we have, there are young listeners, there are middle-aged listeners, there are the elderly listeners, people who've come from various walks of life, right? Various education backgrounds, various social backgrounds, various economic backgrounds, right? Various experiences, various family backgrounds, and you got the Dhamma when you were due to get the Dhamma. That was the right time. So you got it at the right time. Don't you worry about that. What matters is not, oh, alas, I should have gotten it a year ago. That's not what matters. What matters is now that you got it, let's make sure that you're doing what you need to be doing with it. So you do your part, and I'll assure you that the Mahasangha will do their part. For as long as that duty, that responsibility lay on our shoulders, the monks at this monastery, I'll make that promise to you that we will do our part to help you walk the path. No matter when in life you got the Dhamma, from that day forward, if you have firmly resolved to make steps forward, to do the best you can, 100%, I will do the best I can. If you have resolved to do that, your 100% may be 50% for someone else, folks. It may be 75% for someone else. It may be 90% for someone else. Maybe 10% or even 5% or even 1% for someone else. That's fine. Their 100% is not going to be your 100%. Don't try to do the 100% of someone else's 100%. Do your 100%. Do your fullest. Provided you do that, let me assure you that we will always be there. Because we consider that our duty. Our greatest duty, after all, is to ourselves. That is the advice of the Buddha. One's greatest duty is to oneself, Arthanamiya Pataman. Your salvation is your first duty, and then the salvation of others, all other sentient beings. The Buddha puts it very nicely when he talks, when he addresses to his first 60 disciples. Dasahandra will be enlightening you on that later on today. The Buddha puts it very nicely of our duty as the Sangha to disseminate this Dhamma for the betterment, for the benefit, for the bliss and joy of all sentient beings, men, women, humans, devas, and so on. So if our first duty is to ourselves, but then immediately after that, all of you. So don't you despair, don't you worry. I can feel you. I know what you're going through. That is why these sermons, in these sermons, you will find that, in fact, actually, if you, you know, just for fun, just for the fun of it, right? When you got some free time, go back on YouTube and look at the number of sermons you've done, and see if you can work out how many of those sermons actually talk the core Dhamma, like the real deep, core, profound principles of the Dhamma, versus the number of sermons that actually talk about day-to-day life, your life examples, your life situations, and how you face them, the practical stuff. Just do a tally and you will realize what I mean. I think it would be fair to say that over 80% of our sermons talk about the application of the Dhamma. How do you relate the Dhamma to your life? And to do that, I feel lucky, I feel fortunate, I feel happy that I'm able to relate my own life examples and bring them to life so that you can relate to them, because we've all come from similar backgrounds. We've all come from the same boat. So I know what it feels like to be you. I know what you're going through, you know, be that corona or no corona. I mean, I know what you're going through, just in life, right? Just life. And so, I know what help you need. I know the support that you need. It's the same help and support that I needed. That's how I know it. The support and help that I received from my teachers, that's the help and support you need. Different problems, different challenges, yes. But in their very nature, they're all based in the same roots, aren't they? They'd only be based either in desire, aversion, or delusion. None other. So how did I address those issues? How do I continue to address those issues? Well, you will be no different. So have that reassurance. And all I ask of you, all of you, now I want you to think that I'm talking to you individually. I'm not talking to a group of you. I'm not talking to all 50 of you that are listening to this sermon at this time, or however many. I'm talking to you individually. Do, sir, the best you can. Do, madam, the best you can. Dear child, do the best you can. Leave the rest to the Mahasangha. You just do the best you can. That's all you got to do. Leave the rest to us. We offer that. Are you up for that? That's all we need to do. You do the best you can. We'll do the best we can. And together, I think we'll all be able to achieve what we came here for. That is the promise of the Buddhas. Strive. Be heedful. Work hard. He never said, do what you can't do. He always said, do the best you can. Sometimes things you may feel are difficult. Sometimes you might feel things are really difficult. How can I do it? I've never done it. It's just so difficult. So difficult. Sometimes you'll be taken aback. Oh, I can't even bother. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. So maybe I'm not going to try it. It's just too difficult. You know, someone gave me some really, really, really good advice recently. It was actually in one of the sermons done by one of our monks at the monastery. In one of his sermons he said, there's no such thing as a difficult thing in this world. So when he said that, I looked in his face perplexed. What do you mean? There's no such thing as a difficult thing in this world. Surely there are a lot of difficult things. What do you mean there's no such thing as a difficult thing? And then he went on to explain. His explanation for that, his reasoning behind that, the rationale for that, behind that was beautiful. He beautifully put it. He said, then how come there are people for whom that thing, that particular thing, is not difficult? How come there are people in this world who do it so easily? That's a wonderful analogy, isn't it? That's a wonderful way of putting it. How can you say something is difficult? How can you say that thing, that something is difficult, when there are people in this world, when there are others among us for whom doing that particular thing is a walk in the park? It's so easy. So does that not tell us something? Is it the thing that's difficult then? Or is it I who has made it difficult for myself? Real eye-opening. Don't you think so? So, and apply that concept. Feel free to apply that concept in your worldly pursuits, of course. But I think there's another place where it is more important that you apply that. And that is on your path to Nibbana. There will be things that you will find difficult to do, folks. I know it. How come? It takes one to know one. Don't you think ever that when I do these sermons, or any Swami Mahansa for that matter, when they do a sermon and they'll say, you know, don't do these things, don't do those things, you know, how can you even think of doing something like this, so on and so forth. It's not like we've never done those things. I want you to understand this. It's not like we've never done those things. In this birth or in a previous birth. That's what I'm saying. We've all been there. We've all done that. We're all from the same boat. We've all come from the same place, or the same places. So, those words, you must understand, are the words of the Dhamma. It may be the Swami Mahansa's voice, but the words don't belong to the person whose voice it is. Those words are the words of the Dhamma. The Dhamma doesn't belong to anyone. You couldn't say that the Dhamma belongs to the Buddha either. It arose in his mind, true, but it doesn't belong to the Buddha. Otherwise, how come the Buddha says that the Dhamma was my teacher? The Buddha's job, duty, is to come into this world, discover, not invent, discover the Dhamma, and then preach it for the benefit of all of us. So, do you think that I, who talk to you today, in my long journey in samsara, have never committed the atrocities that I talk to you about, and I speak scornfully sometimes? The things that I rebuke today, the things that I say I find disgusting, don't you think I enjoyed in this long journey in samsara? As I'm saying, I know what it feels like, folks. I know what it's like to be you. We've all been there. Heck, you and I, when we were together in Aviti, don't you remember? We were in the same dormitory, in the Sanghati. We were dorm mates. Don't you remember? We climbed up the same thorn tree. Yeah, I was the one who kicked you. We were all there. That's usually how it works. You know, in any group, when a Buddha comes along, there's a group of people, there's a group of sentient beings who get through the ocean of samsara along with him. He's the captain. He steers the ship. He sets sail. And then everyone gets on board. You'll have heard of the Noah and his ark. Now, in another faith, there's the story of Noah and his ark when the all-knowing, all-seeing creator decided it was time to destroy the world. A message was sent to Noah. So what did he do? He built an ark, a large boat. For those who may not be familiar with what an ark is, it's a large boat. And then what happened? Then he boarded this boat and he got two of each type of animal. Two of each type. One male, one female. They all boarded the boat. And then they set sail. In fact, there was nothing to set sail because when the storms came, and all the oceans around the world started to bulge up, and all the water started coming inwards, and all land subsided. And of course, except for the ark and everyone and every animal who was on board the ark, everything else was destroyed. I can see an analogy there. Can you? Is that a true story or not? I don't think we need to go there. Perhaps it's a true story. Perhaps it's not. I don't know. Let's assume it's a true story. Don't want to offend anyone. But I'm thinking, I think there's a resemblance there, isn't there? If you relate that story to the Buddha Shasana, isn't there a Noah? Doesn't he have an ark? And aren't there people who get on board? Who's the Noah? That's the Supreme Buddha. See, no one came and informed Noah, I think you should start building a boat. That message came to him from, as they say, from God. In Buddhist philosophy, we don't believe in an all-creator. Well, the creator is the Paticca-samuppada. The dependent origination process is the creator, or is the creation process. But we believe in the Vipaka. So the Buddha, or the Bodhisattva, on one occasion, he realized he needed to do something about all the suffering that happens and that is about to happen for all these sentient beings. And then, since then, for four incalculable eons and 100,000 more, for four incalculable eons and 100,000 eons, what did he do? He built the ark. He thought to himself, how do I build this ark? There was no one to ask. There was no one to get advice from. Because everyone else was far too busy doing their own thing. When the storms were about to come, people didn't know that the storms were about to come. People didn't know that devastating storms would come and destroy everything in their way. No one knew that. But Noah did. Do you remember the Mantuposaka Jataka? On one occasion when the Buddha or the Bodhisattva, he was a trader and he set sail. I think he was the apprentice of a sailor and he set sail to travel the seas, travel to other continents and engage in trade. And on one occasion, when he was about to set sail, he couldn't leave his mother behind. His mother was poorly, his mother was ill, so he took his mother along with him, with permission from his teacher, or the sailor, he took his mother on board, and then they travelled. After a while, they were in the middle of the vast ocean, and then a storm brewed. The waves came crashing in, and the ship that they were on was destroyed. The Bodhisattva on that occasion tried to save everyone. He tried to save everyone on board, but he couldn't. To his despair, no one was saved except for himself and one other person, and that was his mother. He grabbed hold of his mother and he started to swim. The only soul he could save. He loved his mother very much. That was the only soul he could save. So he grabbed hold of his mother, put her on his back, and then he swam the ocean all throughout until he got to shore. He was able to save his mother that way. But as he swam, plenty of times he felt very tired, he felt exhausted. He felt like giving up. But just as he was about to give up, he thought to himself, No, this is not what I'm here for. I have to do this. I love my mother dearly. I must save myself for myself and for my mother. And so he strived on and on and on. You can imagine it must have been torturous in the icy cold water. Come rain, come the night time, come the scorching sun. He kept on swimming until he got ashore. But all through this while, there was the Brahma called Sahampati, who was looking from the Brahma world and he saw this young man. He realized that this is not an ordinary being. This young man is extremely courageous. When he has made a resolve to do something, he's not the one who gives up. He's not someone who gives up. He's strong-willed. He's courageous. He is determined. And he is very kind. He wanted to save everybody, but he couldn't. But now, when he could quite easily swim the ocean and save himself, with respect and affection towards his mother, he doesn't want to do it by himself. He wants to save his mother also. So this Brahma, having observed this, it is said on one occasion, he makes a firm resolve. His resolve was, may this young man feel me. May he want, just as he is doing today to save his mother. In this vast ocean, when the mother has no hope, she could not save her life without help. There's no way she could do that. So she relies entirely on her young son, on this young man to save her. Entirely, absolutely. Because she's weak, she's frail, she can't fend for herself. If the boy gives up, that's it. At any point, he could let her go and swim and get through the ocean with half the effort. Then it would only be himself to carry. So the Brahma sees this. And he makes a resolve. May this young man, so strong-willed, with such character, such graciousness, want to become a supreme Buddha one day. And may he want to save all sentient beings from this vast ocean of samsara, just as he is doing today with his mother. And as the Sahampati Brahma makes this resolve, this young man, he feels it. He doesn't know where the idea came from. He doesn't know where it came from, why the thought came into his mind. But he thought to himself, just as I today strive to take my mother ashore, I'm resolved, I'm not going to give up. Even if it costs me my life, I am not the one who's going to give up. And when we talked about this, put an obstacle in my way, the obstacle's moving, I ain't moving. In the same manner, only a trillion times stronger, an infinite times stronger, did the Bodhisattva on that occasion make that resolve. And that is what made him a Bodhisattva. That is what elevated him to a status of Bodhisattva on that occasion. That earth-shattering moment, he resolves to himself a very, very strong, firm belief, resolve. From today on, I will do whatever it takes to become a supreme Buddha and to save every sentient being I can from this vast ocean of samsara, just as I do with my mother today. That started the journey. Can you see the image on your screen right now? That's he who I'm talking about. It's he who I'm talking about. That started the journey. And fast forward four incalculable eons and 100,000 more, and we see the advent of that same Bodhisattva in the form of a Supreme Buddha. So you see, in that time, what did he do? He built the ark. He built the ark. There were occasions when he met other Noahs along the way. And there were occasions when he was able to swim by himself. All he needed was a boat or a raft even to get to the other side. He didn't need a massive ark for himself. He just needed a raft there were occasions when that opportunity arose for him, but was he interested? No. Oh no. Because that was not his ambition. His ambition was much more magnanimous than that. It's not like the ambitions that ordinary folks like you and I keep for ourselves. These are earth-shattering ambitions. These are ambitions, once you resolve, the earth below your feet start to tremble. That's the size of these ambitions. That is the resolve that goes into making these ambitions. So that was his ambition. So when a raft was presented to him, you know, this happened when he met a Noah by the name of Deepankara. He wasn't interested. That is not my ambition. I'm not doing this just for myself. I'm doing this for everyone you leave behind, Venerable Sir Deepankara. Anyone and everyone you leave behind, Venerable Sir, that's my people. I will bring them with me. So he built that ark. And then once the ark was built, what have we been doing since? We've all been striving to get on board this ark. The board still says, all boarding. It still says, all aboard. There's still the announcement, all aboard the ark. I fondly recall Guru Swami Mohan's analogy to the train, the underground train. Similar story. Most of you will have Listen to that sermon. You know, we see these stories from time to time in various forms. Sometimes they appear in other scriptures and other philosophies. I'm not saying the two stories are one, that I'm not qualified enough to make that call, but what I'm saying is I see a very strong resemblance here. In my life, if there's ever been a Noah, I know who that Noah is. If there's ever been an ark in my life, in this samsara, I know what that ark is. And that ark is the Sambuddha Shasana. That is the Buddha's dispensation. It is his ministry. It is the Dhamma that he expounded. It is still calling, all aboard, it's now or never. There are those who boarded before us, and they were saved. Once you're on the board, that's it, folks. Now you needn't worry of storm, wind, hailstorms, nothing like that. Hurricanes, nothing to worry about. You hear from Dasahandra's sermons about those who boarded the ark. Those who way before us majestically walked the plank onto the board, onto the ship, onto the ark, with grace and grandeur. They walked the plank majestically. They boarded that ark in royal fashion. They summoned us, they called us, they set us an example. They are our role models. They left behind everything that they thought was useless, pointless, senseless. And ever since they have been making that call to us, give up all these useless pursuits, folks. Come on, a storm's brewing. Can't you see the dark clouds yonder? They are coming. You better hurry up. That is what they have been saying all along. I tell you folks, those clouds are so near, you can almost smell them. Before you could see them, then you could hear them. Now it's just so scarily near, you can almost smell them. Can't you? Can't you? The dark storms of that storm, the dark clouds of that storm, the thunder, the deafening thunder, the blinding lightning. The storms are coming. What you're waiting for? What are you waiting for? The ark is ready. The captain's ready to sail you across. He's on board. Many have boarded this ark. And there's room for more. That's the beauty of it. There's room for more. Yes, for you. And you. And you, and you. And every one of you. There's room for all of you. There's room for all of us. Come on. We've got to board that ark. It's now or never. That tick, that tock you hear on the clock, with every second, it draws that storm towards us. And when that storm hits, everything and anything but the ark will be annihilated, destroyed to smithereens, shattered, pulverized. So what are you waiting for? We have a Noah. We have an ark. And there are those who have already boarded the ship. There are those who have not only boarded the ship, but they have also taken up the job of various crewmen. You can see them with bald heads. Can you see them from where you are? Look at the ark. Can you see some people walking around? They're the ones with the bald heads. That's just one of the things you got to do when you become a crew member. You got to shave your head. And they give you a new uniform. Can you see them with that? If you want to become a crew member, you've got to leave your household goods behind. No, you can't bring your plate. They give you a new, funny-looking plate. It's a curved one. It's a bowl. They're all crew members. Can you see them? Can you hear their call? Be silent for a moment. And have your ears wide open. Can you hear them calling? All aboard the Noah's Ark. Can you hear them calling? That's what they're saying. There's a storm coming. It's going to be rough. It's going to be tough. It's going to be soul destroying. It's going to kill every living thing alive. What are you waiting for? You don't have to become a crew member to board the ark. There is no obligation. But once you are a crew member, you can help others. You can lend a helping hand. You can lend your arm and say, come on, hold my hand. Come on, come up. Put your step there. Right, that's it. Come on, up, up. Yeah, at the count of three. One, two, that's it. You can do that once you are a crew member. Have you seen people like them? Can you see them right now? Can you see them with their eyes closed? Head tilted down? They must be thinking about something. Wonder what they're thinking about. I feel what they're thinking about is the storm that's coming. And they're wondering, how can I help more people come on board the ark? I'm now on the ark. I can now save myself, but that's not enough. Because the ship's great captain did not build this ark for himself. He built this for him and everyone. As a crew member, it is my duty also to not just save myself, but everyone. Can you see them? Can you see them walk single file? Can you see them one hand on the other, contemplating, how do I save myself? How do I save others? Get on board the ark, folks. Strive. Because the storm is coming. It will most definitely come. Storms have come before this. Everything but the arts were destroyed. A storm is coming, and storms will come in future. Everything but the arks and those who boarded the arks will be destroyed. It's not a may, they will be destroyed. So all aboard the ark now. You can do this. See, you don't have to build it. It has been built for you. That is the power of your merits. Thanks to your merits, an ark is ready for you to board. Who do you think is more fortunate? One who has to build the ark, or one who can get on a ready-made ark? Come on, easy question, isn't it? Who do you think is more fortunate? Who do you think is more blessed? Who do you think is going to have an easier time? One who has to build the ark, or one who just has to get on board the ark? What do you have to do? The ark was built 2.5 centuries ago. It's still strong. Oh, I give you that. It is so very strong. It can hold you and everyone else. It can hold you and a million more of you. No hassle, no bother. So what are you waiting for? Are there things you can't leave behind? Is that a worthwhile excuse? when you know what's at stake here, I want you to think, folks, why are you postponing this? Why are you saying, not today, maybe tomorrow? What is the reason for your putting this off? Do you doubt the storm? I'm telling you, can you not smell it? The air doesn't smell like it normally does. Take a deep breath in. Can you not smell something funny in the air? Can you not smell a hint of a storm? First you saw the lightning, then you heard the thunder. Now can you not smell it? Just look around you. Can't you see people struggling, striving to try and get on board the ark? People who at least once a month, they leave everything behind, their shops, their businesses, their workplaces, their schools, their homes. They clad themselves in white. They leave everything behind and they go and join the boarding centers. That's where you can onboard the ark. There are these centers all around the country. Clad in white, you got to turn up. And each of these centers is staffed by a crew member, at least one. Here, you got about 60. All staff members doing their best to register new passengers, talking to them, finding out what their reservations are. In other words, what's keeping them from making that jump? Can you see one doing that just now? Look on screen. They talk to them. They explain to them, this is the lifestyle you're going to have to live once you board the ark. Don't worry. You can be happy just as you are, if not happier. And then they all come. Young, middle-aged, elderly. Those crew members give them hope. Don't you worry. Because the reason that these people have turned up to these centers is because they could sense something's not right. Something doesn't sound right. Something doesn't smell right. Can you hear the voice? Can you hear the voice of the crew members calling you, beckoning you? Can you hear a voice now? Calling you to come and get on this ark? And then to do your duty for others, so that others can also board this ark, so they can all save themselves from the inevitable destruction that's coming. One after the other, they come. Those who understand it, those who realize it, those who believe in the philosophy of the captain, when he has spoken, when he has shown the truth, when he has made them realize, once they have opened their eyes you can no longer pretend you don't know there's a problem. Once you've seen the problem, you can no longer pretend there's no problem. There's no more self-deception. Once you've seen this problem, you can go about and go to your parties and drink and dance and play around, but in the back of your mind there's a voice. It's an echo of the voice of the captain. The voice that once said, on board the ark, now there's a storm coming, folks. That voice resounds, echoes in the back of your mind. So what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? What is it you can't leave behind? Have you forgotten that you were one of them who didn't manage to get on that ark on previous occasions, and you lost everything? When the storm comes, it takes you to the deepest, darkest pits of the ocean. When it hits you, if you're not ready, it takes you to the bottom of the ocean. And sometimes, once you're there, you're going to have to stay there for a very long time. Other Noahs will come and build their arks. They'll board others and they will save them, whereas you'll be right at the bottom of the pit. With no knowledge of what's going on the surface. No idea. But in the deep, dark depths of this vast ocean, you'll be lost for a very long time. So why wait? It's happened to you before. Many times. Those children you see, they have had enough of waiting. Sick and tired of waiting. They can't wait any longer. They realize it's now or never. So they start young. They don't wait until they have failed the test of life, like most people do. They don't wait until they realize, oh, all those 60 years was just a waste. They don't wait till then. They want it now. They want to get on the ark now, while they still can. I'm asking you, those of you who are listening to this sermon, what is it that you can't leave behind? Make a list of the things you can't leave behind, folks, and then ask yourself the question, what is at stake here? There's a storm coming. You only have one Noah. There's only one ark. The Noah is your Supreme Buddha. The ark is the Dhamma. Those crew members, members of the Mahasangha, and you, I'm asking you to be passengers. At the very least. Those of you who are courageous, those of you who believe, I'm here not just for my own salvation, but I have a duty to others. All these other men, women and children, I have a duty to them. Countless times they have been my truest friends, my saviors. They have been there for me. They did whatever they could to help me, support me, to assist me. Now I have a chance to save them. It may be that they still don't understand. There'll be the sick, the elderly, the feeble. There'll be the young, little children, babies. Your duty is towards all of them. But first of all, you need to get on board that ark. There's still time. But not a lot of time. Don't ever fool yourself to thinking that you have 2,500 years of the Sambuddha Shasana left. 2,500 years of the Sambuddha Shasana left. That is correct. The moment you put the word you into that sentence, that's an incorrect statement. You don't have 2,500 years of the Sambuddha Shasana left. The Sambuddha Shasana has 2,500 years left. You have your life left. Whatever the duration of that life is. It may be 30 years, 20, 10, 5, 4, 1, 6 months, 2 months, or a couple of weeks. Is your day tomorrow? Are you sure? Who gave you that assurance? It's only 3:30 in the afternoon. How do you know it's not 5:30 when your time's up? That doesn't leave you till tomorrow. That only leaves you another couple of hours. Do you remember that heart attack from last year? What did the doctor say about it? Didn't they say, watch your diet, be careful, because once you've been struck, it's easier to be struck again? Don't you remember that? Doesn't that thought come into your mind when you consider all factors to decide whether I listen to the sermon today or I go out with friends? Who says you've got till tomorrow? Haven't your friends passed away at a younger age than you? What about your friend who passed away 6 months ago? What about your friend who passed away due to corona? How are they going to get on the ark? Access denied. Try getting them on board the ark. Access denied. For how long? Till the next ark. Come on, my people, what are you waiting for? You have got to get on board this ark. It's now or never. Think back to Guru Swami Nivas's sermon where he talked about the underground train. You have watched the video. Sasara Dumriya was titled. Excuse me. In a short while it's going to start moving. And then the gates are going to shut. The doors are going to shut. And then the music stops playing. The problem is, which do you think happens first? The music stopping playing? Or the doors shutting? Which do you think happens first? Unfortunately, the doors shut first. Then the music stops. Which does not give you time to realize, oh, the music has stopped. Perhaps I had better get on the train. Access denied. The doors are shut. Unfortunately, it's always that way around. What are you waiting for? You know you're better than that. I know you're better than that. So why do we kid around? What are the things you can't leave behind? Look at those young children. They've left everything behind. The whole world they've left behind. For the greater good. That of theirs and all other sentient beings. The thing is, the only thing you're leaving behind is suffering. It's just another name for it. Your pet cat is just another name for suffering. I won't name members of your family. But I want you to think. Just in case it comes as too much of a shock. But do you not agree with me that what I have left unsaid rings true in your mind? What are you struggling to leave behind? Is it your Rolex? Or is it your Gucci? What are you struggling to leave behind? Your car? Your house? Your estates? Your wardrobe? Your makeup? Is it your long hair? What's at stake here? What's with the second thought? You're not going to hear this voice for long. After a while, you're going to hear the horn. And when that horn starts blaring, that'll be the final call. The final call. This is the final announcement. The storm is coming. Those who wish to save their lives, board the ark now. You'll hear that message 3 times. At the end of that, all hell breaks loose. Some of you may feel, what a gloomy picture Swami Nivas is painting in front of our eyes. Okay. Think about the picture that everyone else paints in front of your eyes. Think about the picture that the TV adverts paint in front of your eyes. The glossy magazines. Your friends, or so-called friends. Your family, or allow me to say, so-called family. Look at the picture they paint in front of your eyes. Look at the world they promise for you. Is it not rife from fear and grief? Can you not taste the grief and fear that haunts your life? Is it not almost palpable? Think about anything you love, anything you're struggling to give up. You can't stand the thought of giving it up. It is intricately woven to the very meaning of your life. Think about something like that. It may be animate or inanimate. Just think of something as an example. Can you not taste the fear that runs through your system, that runs through your veins, the moment I call it out? Do you want me to try something? Alright, let's give it a few examples. Your beloved son. Can you taste fear? Can you not taste the fear? It's almost palpable, is it not? At the tip of your tongue, can you not taste it? Fear? Your beloved husband. Did that not just send a shockwave down your spine? Your mother. Your father, your beloved daughter. I can feel you. As I said at the beginning, I have only one question for you folks. Can you feel me? Do you feel me? I can feel you. I can feel the taste of fear on the tip of your tongue. Can you? The moment I remind you of your dead parents, what happens to you? Doesn't your entire system go into a sort of semi-hibernation? Are you not struck with lockdown? If I remind you about the business transaction that went completely bonkers, where you lost 500,000, remember? Do you remember that 500,000 that you lost? Can you taste the tingling taste of fear and grief and despair and disappointment? Is that what you struggle to leave behind? Most of you will be at home right now. All of those doors have locks on them, don't they? And they do get locked every night, don't they? Double locked, don't they? The gate has a padlock on it, doesn't it? Three of them. There are glass shards along the parapet wall, aren't there? That's not to keep the birds away. Or is it iron thorns on your perimeter wall? What is that to keep away? Santa Claus? Can you taste the fear? Some even have a guard dog. What about the rich and the powerful? Yes, yes, you included. But the more rich and the more powerful? You know, when the Buddha arrives, he's normally both succeeded and preceded by a parade. Some of them carrying flowers, usually devas. And other men and women following him. Members of the Sangha, his disciples, walk in single file behind him. The devas laying down flowers before his feet. What about the rich and powerful of today? When they enter the scene, what comes before them? What comes after them? Many cars with people in them, throwing flowers, right? What do they have in their hands? Garlands, right? That's a funny little garland. Apparently it's called a T-56. It's an automatic garland. Is that because they are rich and they are powerful? Or is that because they can taste the fear? You got to see sometime the parade. In front, behind, either side. Am I saying this is wrong? Oh, no, 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 no. That's not what I'm saying. Long may that continue. What I'm saying is that what people struggle to leave behind? Is that perhaps your ambition? Maybe one day you can come in that big car, that limousine, and get out of it. Someone holds the door open for you. And then someone salutes you as you get out. welcome sir, welcome madam. Is that what you can't leave behind to get out, to get on that ark? The ark that has been built to save your life? Not once have I seen someone who's rich and or powerful being preceded or succeeded by men carrying garlands or showering flowers along the way. But I do see them carrying toys made of metal with round spherical things that are loaded on the inside, that can pierce through human flesh and bones. Must be a new type of flower. So is rich what you want to become, or powerful what you want to become? All about the ark. Oh, there's another announcement. What do you want to do? Young men and women listening to this sermon, can you hear me? Can you feel me? What are you waiting for? Do you not remember how all of you joined the Bodhisattva in the previous births, in many of his previous births, on each occasion when he gave alms, did charity, helped others, built temples, pagodas, dwellings for the Mahasangha, gave offerings to previous Buddhas, laid down carpets of flowers, and asked, invited them to walk over him, lest their feet get muddy? Do you not remember you were all there when it happened? Do you not remember you went and plucked the flowers? Do you not remember you cooked the food? You washed the plates? You washed the alms bowls? And you handed them to the Buddha? You handed them to the Arahants who were present in that day? And then at the end of that almsgiving, do you not remember how he who was our guardian, he walked up to the Supreme One back then, knelt down in front of him, worshipped him, and then spoke and said, Venerable Sir, by the merits that we have all acquired, may I and everyone behind me who got together, who came together to make this meritorious deed, event, come to life, be able to attain the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. When might that happen, sir? The then incumbent Buddha looked into the future and made a proclamation. 100,000 eons from now, you will become the Gautama Sambuddha. And all these people behind you, everyone, each and every single one of them, those who helped clean the place, those who helped cook the food, serve the food, provide shelter, build the place, laid flowers, lit the candles, lit the incense, sang praises, sang hymns, invited the Sangha, helped them sit down, provided them with transport, invited others, and helped in every single way they could possibly imagine, all of them will board that ark that you shall build. Do you not remember you were there? If you weren't there, how come? These words send a shiver down your spine. How come your knees have started to tremble? How come your palms have become sweaty? How come your heart's beating faster? How come you can't remain sat down? How come you feel, my time has come? How can you say, I wasn't there when it all happened? How come you can hear this voice today, now? How come I can feel you? How come you can feel? You can sense the call of the captain in these words, in this voice. How can you put it off any longer? What are those things you can't leave behind? Is it not time you prioritized, folks? Is it not time you prioritized your happiness over everything else? When you thought you were prioritizing your happiness over everything else all this while, do you not realize that was a complete miscalculation? Never in samsara did you prioritize your happiness. Never. I'm asking you, how about now? About time. Young men out there listening to my voice, you have been summoned. It is time. How much longer are you going to wait? Until the next pandemic? For those who want to become a crew member, we are still open. Because when you can feel me, when you can hear this voice, and when you know my time has come, we'll be the last one to put a barrier in your way. In fact, as crew members, it is our duty to help you remove those obstacles. Whatever we can, we will do. It is time. It is time to save yourself. It is time to save everyone else. As you save yourself. You know, can you realize, can you see, folks, how meaningless it is for someone to say, you know, it is so selfish for someone to want to go and become a monk. You know, they leave everyone else behind, all those hopes, dreams that they built. It is so selfish of them. People don't think about others when they go become monks. What do you think I'm doing right now? Not thinking about others? Name one thing I do in a day where I'm not thinking about others. One thing I do in the day when I'm not thinking about others. Name one. Don't need two. I just need one. Is it taking my arms? You sure? I'm not thinking about others. Is it waking up in the morning? Is it transferring merits at the end of the day? Is it preaching this sermon? Is it offering a Buddha puja? Is it chanting Pirith? Is it fair for anyone to say, for anyone to be saying, becoming monk, that's so selfish. You're only interested in your own salvation. You don't think about others. Really? Once a week I talk to you. Once a week I talk to my parents. I'm able to help them. I'm able to help you in ways I could never imagine, in ways that was never possible to me. Was that not because I went forth? Was that not because I joined the crew? So what a ridiculous story that is. I know, duties, responsibilities. I'm not saying disregard them. Fulfill them. But any more? For what? The ark is here. For now. All aboard the ark. One day that's going to be the last and final call. Where will you be then? What will you be doing then? Will you be where your great grandparents are today? Which is where? Exactly. Will you be where your grandparents are today? Which is where? Exactly. All aboard the ark. Storms are coming. It's now or never. Time's passing by. Your time's passing by. One day, you won't hear these words anymore. Either that's because my time's up, or your time's up. Either way, that'll be it for a very long time. So awaken, folks, awaken. Open your eyes. Stand up. It may be that you can't make a change today, but get on your feet now. And I mean literally. Get on your feet and make a firm resolve. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. Enough of the waiting. Enough of the maybe tomorrow, maybe next year, maybe in the next birth. They're all fantasies. Many people before you have said similar stories. Where are they now? Exactly. The Buddha wasn't kidding when he said his final words were uttered, appamadena sampadeta. it was no joke. He was not kidding. What he was saying was, the storms are coming. You'd better hurry up. That's what he said. Those were the words of the great master. Need I say more? So come. Come and join us. Come and do what you came here to do. Come and do what you were born to do. It is time. I promised you, you will be able to hear the words of the Buddha. In Dasamudra's voice, you'll hear his words. He addressed his monks and he reminded them how he crossed this vast ocean of samsara, this fearless or this fearsome, this gruesome, torturous cesspit of samsara, and got through to the other side. And he invited us, and we have come. Don't you forget that you were there when he made that resolve. All that remains is for you to come. Come and join. If not the Mahasangha, you can still join the Sangha. Let us be united in the Dhamma. We may dress differently, but let us be united in the Dhamma. Let you and I, may we all see the world in the same way. May we see the senseless, useless, meaningless, vexatious nature of all that is conditioned. May we see that the attachment to any of such things can only lead to one thing, and that is suffering. May we therefore realize that no good can come to any being who falls into that trap. And having seen that, may we taste the fruit of Nibbana. May we taste that bliss. May we enjoy and rejoice in that bliss. May you achieve that bliss in the very near future. That is what I wish for myself and for all of you. May the Noble Trikujan be with you all.
Okay. Before we commence, let us take a few moments to worship the Supreme Buddha. To do this, may you be upstanding and recite Namaskar with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Okay, you may all be seated. Okay, so today we're going to have a story of an arahat called Gavampati, Venerable Gavampati. So let's go back to the beginning, right at the beginning, to the moment his journey to become an arahat started. So let us go back in time, 100,000 eons back, at the time of the Buddha Padamuttara. Our Venerable Gaudapati, in his previous life, was in a town called Hansavati. He was born in a really rich class and had a very rich life. His life was filled with luxury. And because of his surrounding, he was a very kind, gentle, thoughtful person. When he was a young adult, he was able to meet the Buddha, was able to listen to his sermons, and therefore from that day onwards became the follower, a follower of the Buddha. He enjoyed giving dhanas and he enjoyed listening to the Dharma. But then one day he thought, in the future, may I also become an arahat. Maybe even in a sasana somewhere in the future, may I become an arahat. He knew that this wasn't going to be easy. He knew that he has a lot of things to do. Whether it's to become an arahat in this life, or to become an arahat in a future sasana, he's going to have to do a lot of merit. So understanding this, from that moment onwards, he started to do more merit than he did before. He gave more dhanas. He listened to more sermons, trying to understand the Dharma. But unfortunately, in that life, he wasn't able to become an arahat. He wasn't able to have the basic understanding of the Dharma. He wasn't able to become Sotapanna, but yet he knew what was good, he knew what was bad. And because of his firm determination, he strived to do what is needed to become an arahat. Unfortunately, he died. But because of his merits, he was born as a deva. And for the next 31 eons, he was born as a deva and a human, deva, human, deva, human, until the Buddha Sikhi was alive and living on earth. Now I'm going to stop the story here for a minute. I hope most of you give a Buddha Puja, either every day, once a week, once a month, it doesn't matter, but you give a Buddha Puja. And this you give light, flowers, maybe incense sticks, and maybe pure water, clean pure water, and so on and so forth. But do we know the amount of power that this has? How much power or how much merit is behind the flower? That just a flower is able to bring together the merits for you to become an arahat in the future. Because that's what exactly what happened to Gaudapati. Because at the time of the Buddha Sikhi, he was born in a clan of forest hunters, which are called Vedas. And because he was a forest hunter, he used to live in the forest. He knew all the forests, he knew the forest like the back of his hand. He was very skilled catching animals, and all of this. But one day, he went hunting. So you can imagine, he was following some sort of animal. But in the corner of his eye, he saw a person. Not an ordinary person though. He saw the Buddha Sikhi meditating under a tree. But he was a Vedda, he was a forest hunter, and he didn't know who a Buddha was. But by looking at him, he was awestruck. He was impressed by the serene and calm, tranquil body of the Buddha. So he stopped the hunt there. At that moment, he stopped the hunt. He stopped chasing after the animals and he went back into the forest, looking for something to give. You see, just by looking at the Buddha, this forest hunter, Vedda, just decided he wanted to give something. So he went back into the forest and he was looking for something. On him, there may be swords and knives and maybe a bow and arrow, maybe even some fresh meat that he's caught. But he obviously knew that he couldn't give uncooked meat to the Buddha or to this person or this monk. And so he kept looking in the forest until one flower caught his eye. So immediately he had nothing else to offer. So he went to this tree, picked a single flower, and holding it with his two hands, started making his way to this acetate core in his eyes, to this strange but wonderful person. So he took the flowers, holding it. The closer he came, the happier he got. And finally, he offered this flower to the Buddha Sikhi and took a few steps back and worshipped him. You see, as a forest hunter or a Vedda, their main occupation or their main job is to hunt animals, and using this meat, that's what fed them. So you can imagine this forest hunter, from the day he could pick up a knife, or from the day he could shoot an arrow, his father or his uncles and all his, or his brothers took him to hunt. And so you can imagine most of his life, all he did was bad deeds, bad karmas. But then this day he changed. He decided he wants to offer a flower. So you can imagine this was the only good deed he has done in his life. And so when he died, when he passed away, he was born in the heavens and had a lot of luxury. Everything he wanted, just because he offered a flower to the Buddha. But this flower wasn't just for him to go to heaven. This flower has also helped him in one of his future lives to become an arahat. This flower is one of the reasons. So during his time in this heaven, another Buddha was born into the earth. The Buddha Konagama. So it's men, right? One Buddha to the next. We know as a fact that the birth of a Buddha is very rare. And he was a deva between one and another. So think about it. So at this time, the Buddha had passed away, leaving behind relics. And so everyone in the town, everyone from the nearby towns as well, had helped make a pagoda or a stupa for these relics. But this man wanted to do something. He wanted to do something that was different. He wanted to build a platform for this stupa or this pagoda. Now, he wasn't born in a very rich family. So you imagine he didn't have enough money. But he had something that he could offer. That was his time. That was his energy. So putting his time and effort, he was able. He wanted to wrap a flag around this pagoda. So again, with his time and effort, he took his time and effort to sew a very long flag. And using what he has, using the assets he has, he was able to make it. And he was able to wrap this flag around the stupa. Doesn't that show that money doesn't count? Money doesn't matter. Your merits don't mean, doesn't show, there's no correlation between money and merit. You could say this man gave something that is more valuable than money. Time. And his own effort or his power, his own energy. Maybe he didn't even use his money to make the platform. Maybe he didn't even use any of his, some of it, he didn't use his money to make his flag either. He may have made his flag out of items or piece of clothes and things he had around the house. But he gave his most valuable assets, time and effort. In one of his future lives, he had to make a decision. Whether it's friends or merit. This is a choice that I think most of us have to make. Whether it's to go along with your friends or go to demerit. Because in our lives we are surrounded by people who have a lot to do. Whether say on Sundays, Saturdays, Sundays, Friday nights, they are pretty much booked with many things. Whether it's parties, whether it's going on trips, going out to eat. And so I think that most of you are needing to decide either to do this, to do what they've planned, or to do merits and listen to the Dharma. You see, this was one of the choices that the Venerable Gaumbati had to make in his previous life. So again, he was born at the time of the birth of the Buddha, Kāsapa. He was born in a clan which shepherds cows. And so when he was a young boy, and any time he found free, whether he's not doing chores, or he's not learning, he used to spend time with other shepherds. Because he loved not only to look after cows, but he also loved to, he loved the associations with other shepherds. He liked to be with his friends. You can imagine that cow shepherds don't have a lot to do. So when the cows are grazing on the grass, you can imagine these cow shepherds come together and they play games, talk, or do something together. So from a young age to when he became independent, when he became an adult, he was a shepherd. Now one day, these shepherds had come together, and they were doing something that seemed like fun. You can imagine that they were going to do something, or going to play a game, or some sort. But the shepherd that is going to become Gaumbati in the future, so that shepherd, in the corner of his eyes, saw an arahat in the middle of the field, under a tree, eating his food. He could see that the sun was shining in his face. He could see the beads of sweat on his forehead. He could see that this arahat was physically uncomfortable. And so, he wanted to build a roof, a small hut for this arahat. But now is the time when he needs to make his decision. Whether it's to go along with his friends and play this game, or to make a roof for his arahat. So he had a choice to make. You can imagine him even asking other shepherds, like, I want to build this hut for this monk over there, this arahat over there. What should I do? And you can imagine these shepherds are like, well, don't. You can still be with us and let's play this game. It's going to be a fun game. Let's say, we're going to jump over these cows, each one of them. Or we're going to ride this cow until we fall off. Or some sort of game. There's no point on building a hut for this arahat. And so, he may have been torn between these two ideas. Whether it's to keep playing with his friends, or whether it's to build a hut. Build a roof over this arahat's head. So after some time, he decided, no. I've played with my friends for a long time. From a small age, I've been playing with my friends. But today, I'm going to do merit. I'm going to do some merits that's going to help me in the future. And he was determined. This is what he's going to do. You can imagine the steps, the moment he decided this, and he's taking steps towards this arahat. You can hear the laughter. You can hear all the fun and games. But he was determined. Today I'm going to do some merit. Today I'm going to help this arahat. I'm going to build a roof. I'm going to build a hut. I'm going to build a roof over this arahat's head. What is the last thing I do? So shepherds those days don't have many things on them. Because all they have to do is take care of cows. They don't need money, they don't need many things. All they need is food. And maybe some ropes. So he has nothing to give. He has no item, there's nothing he can use. So the shepherd goes into the forest, deep into the forest. And luckily he finds two very strong logs. And also he found a Mari tree. It is said that Mari trees are flowering trees and it has a very sweet smell to it. It's a very pleasant smell. So the shepherd takes these two logs, takes some leaves and twigs from this Mari tree. Unfortunately, there was no flowers. But he took all these and went to the tree. He went to the tree where minutes before the arahat had been in, and he started to build this hut. He used the two big logs as support, and he used the small twigs and leaves of the Mari tree to build a roof and to coat the floor to make a small carpet. And also, he went back into the forest and brought a small sapling for Mari tree and planted it near this hut as well. So the next day, when this arahat had made his way with his after begging for alms, he went and saw that this man had built the shepherd had built a roof, a small hut. Seeing that if this arhat went under this roof, this man will increase his merit. This arhat went under this hut, and started to eat. After that, he transferred the merits to the shepherd. And to make the shepherd even more to make him more happy, he stayed there. He started to meditate under this hut as well. At this moment, the shepherd's heart was about to explode. He's done all this merit. He was over the moon. He had built a small hut. Rather than playing with his friends, he built a hut where this arahat had just taken his meal, had transferred merits, and then has started to meditate. Now, with this heart full of happiness, heart full of merit, he went back to his shepherd friends to join them. But every day, you can imagine, every time he went to this field, he would look at this hut to see this arahat meditating under. He knew that he would never regret making the hut. This arahat is now shaded from the elements, shaded from the sun. Even if it rains, he was protected. And so, when the shepherd had died, he was born in Chalathum Maharaj in a palace made of silver in the middle of a Mari forest. Mari had another name called Sirasa. And so people used to call that palace Sirasa Palace. And so the Deva who used to live in that palace, it's called Sirasa Devaputta. So Sirasa Devaputta had lived in this palace made of silver in the middle of a Mari forest. It is said when these Mari in this forest, when the flowers blossom, that a sweet smell, the pleasant smell of the flowers, used to spread all across his palace, filling his palace with it, and used to spread throughout the surrounding as well. So, Sirasa Devaputta had lived a life of luxury. Until his life had run out. Where he was born again human. At the time of Gautama Buddha. In his final life, he was named Gawampati. Now, before we continue the story, you'll be introduced to a person called Yasa. And I would like you to see if you are like him. Okay, so Gaumapati had a group of friends, group of best friends, but the main one, the leader of the group, was called Yasu. These friends lived in the town of Banasnur. At this time, the Buddha was in Isipatana. And it was a time when the first five ascetics became arhats. So we're going back to the early stages of this Buddha's asana. So it was the time where the Buddha decided to spend his first rain retreat. His first rain retreat in Isipatanara. And this friend Yasa decided he was going to go and see this Buddha. And after listening to a sermon, after listening to the preachings of the Buddha, he became Sotapanna. And because of his father, because listening to a sermon that the Buddha had preached to his father, he became an arahat. And so Yasa decided he wanted to renunciate. He wanted to ordain as a monk. Now, when the news of Yasa's ordination came to the ears of his friends, they were surprised. But then they also knew who their friend Yasa was. They knew that if Yasa had ordained, then the sasana isn't a petty thing. So these friends decided that they want to go see Yasa. They want to see their friend and ask him what he understood. So they made their journey to their friend. And after Yasa had talked to his friends, he took them to the Buddha. He said, "O Venerable Sir, these are my four great friends. Please preach to them. Please preach the Dharma to them." And so the Buddha started to preach. And after the end of his discourse, the four friends became Sotapanna. And at that moment they fell to their knees and they asked the Buddha, "Please can you ordain us?" The Buddha slowly extended his hand and said, "You have listened to the Dharma. Now follow the path and eradicate suffering." So, these friends had all ordained. And after no time, the newly ordained monks practiced the path and became arhats. So at that time, this was the start of the Buddha Sasana. This was the start of the Sasana. And so at that time, when these friends became arhats, there was only 11 arhats, including the Buddha. And then, after some time, another 50 friends of Gavampati and Yasa and all the other friends that had ordained, another 50 of them, again, when the news arrived to them, they also thought that if these people had ordained and had left worldly pleasures, that means this sasana is not a petty thing. Now, can you imagine what sort of people they were, these group of friends? That 50 people thought that if they ordained, this is not a petty thing. This is much more profound than they could see. So again, these 50 friends made their way to see their old friends. And again, these old friends took them to the Buddha and again asked the Buddha to preach to them. Again, each of these 50 became Sotapanna. And they ordained, and in no time, they became arhats as well. So remember, this is the start of the sasana. This is the start. When these 50 became arhats, there's only 61 arhats. And so, for the first time, the Buddha summoned his monks, all 61 of them, and addressed them. "O monks, I have conquered the enemies of desire and defilements, and have crossed the gruesome, the fearsome samsara. Just as I, you have also done the same. So monks, for the benefit for all, for the joy of all, with empathy to all sentient beings, men and gods, for their betterment, for their bliss, begin your travels to spread my teaching. Ensure that no two of you travel the same path. Preach the Dharma, which is pristine, at the beginning, middle, and end, and is complete in every sense. Utter the pure and noble path. There are such beings which have but a few defilements. If they don't get to listen to the Dharma, it will lead them to their decadence. Monks, proclaim the Dharma. To those beings who listen to the Dharma will understand it. I will also now set forth to travel to the country Uruvel, to the village Senani. So imagine that. The Buddha addressed his monks, 61 arahats for the first time, and told them to not to go spread the Dharma. Make sure know that two of you don't go on the same path. Spread it for everyone. Now let's take a moment to go back to the story. So, Yasa became an arahat and his friends came to him. Now, what he did was he immediately took them to the Buddha and told them to listen to the Buddha, to listen to his preaching. And so when these friends became Sotapannas and became Arahats as well, another 50 of their friends came to them. And again the same thing happened. So Yasa was not just a friend, but a noble friend to the others. And so was Gaumpati and all of the other friends. They weren't just normal friends, they were noble friends. When they understood that something was right, when they understood the Dharma, I don't think they didn't say anything about hesitation. He didn't hesitate. Took them straight to the source. So Yasa, Gaumpati and all the friends took each and every one of them straight to the Buddha. And whether they liked it or not, you can almost imagine that they forced them to listen to the Dharma, knowing that this is right. Now my question is, are you like that? Do you help others like Yasa helped his friends? Do you push them to listen to the Dharma? Push them to practice their path? Or do you let them, like when the Buddha said, like some beings have a few defilements, but if they don't listen to the Dharma, it will lead them to their decadence. So are you leaving your friends behind? Are you leaving your friends to their decadence? So what sort of friend are you? A friend? A noble friend? Or an enemy of your friends? And also I'd like to point out that the Buddha had addressed his monks, all 61 of the arhats, but I feel that he wasn't addressing just them. He was addressing each and every one of us. Even though it says that he has conquered desire and all defilements, and you know you've done the same. But to the point that we understand, it says to preach the Dharma, which is pristine in the beginning, middle and end, which is complete in every way. He's almost inviting you and I to also for help. Not for your benefit, for the benefit of all, for the joy of all, with empathy to all sentient beings. He's inviting you. He invited you to spread the Dharma. Spread your understanding to others. And don't forget the universal law. What you give, you get. You give the Dharma, you receive the Dharma. So after the Buddha had addressed his monks, Gaudapati went on foot and started to preach the Dharma to others, just like the Buddha said. And all these 61 monks, just like the Buddha said, no two of them went on the same path. So Gaudapati made his way to the north of Dhammadina, to the town of Sahata, where there was a monastery called Anjana Forest Monastery. So, one day, the Buddha made his way to this forest monastery, Anjana Forest Monastery, with all of the Mahasangha. But unfortunately, this monastery wasn't a big one. There was not enough space to accommodate each and every one of them. So, some of these monks had left the monastery and decided to sleep on the banks of a lake. So the gentle breeze over the lake cooled the monks as they slept. But in the middle of the night, the winds got faster. A storm was brewing. Strong gales. And that made a large wave. And that large wave was making its way to the bank where these monks were sleeping. As the wave made its way, it made a loud noise, a loud sound. And so due to this sound, these monks woke up. And they found that this wave was making its way to the banks. There was no way to stop this wave. And there isn't anywhere to hide. So, some of the younger monks thought that this was going to be their end. This wave was going to come down and kill them all. And so some of them started crying, some of them started shouting. They were shaking. But the Buddha heard the shout and the sound that the commotion that was made. And the Buddha told the Venerable Gaudapati to stop the wave and go and pacify the monks. So Venerable Gaudapati made his way to this lake and fearlessly literally fearlessly. He would have stood at the bank of the lake and using his supernatural powers. He froze the wave. Just like he stopped time, the wave just stopped. The monks were overjoyed. The monks found out that they're not going to die. They were overjoyed to see that the wave has stopped. And from that moment onwards, Gaumbhati was known for his powers, supernatural powers. But not only the monks, even the people in the villages were surprised, had heard that there was a massive wave was making its way to the banks of the lake, and this monk had stopped it, frozen it in time. And so a son of a baron called Madhuvasutta, the idea came to him that if this monk is this powerful, how powerful might his teacher be? So he went, son of Madhuvasutta, went to the Venerable Gaumbhati and asked if he could be ordained as his student. So the Venerable Gaumbhati ordained him, and in no time the son became an arhat. One day, this newly ordained monk saw that some monks don't like and don't respect others. They don't like to associate other monks. They like to be alone by themselves. And so he went to them and said, if you don't like associating noble people, if you don't like associating Kalyan Mitras, it's like a fish living in shallow waters, struggling for its life. It is like rotten seeds being sown into fertile lands. No matter how fertile these lands are, your seeds are rotten. You cannot reap your fruit. You cannot reap your crops. Your salvation, your enlightenment is very far away. It's because they couldn't live with other Kalyan Mitras. They would rather live by themselves. And it is like having rotten seeds, because they're not ready to understand the Dharma. They're not ready to it. So no matter how fertile the lands are, these rotten seeds can't grow. And so he said that, but if you change, If you like to associate Kalyan with the Satpurushas, if you like to live with them, to like to associate them, to like to talk with them, and definitely if you like to if you respect them, it's the opposite. It's like for a fish to be living in the ocean, being able to swim wherever he wants, whenever he wants, being able to live. It's like having very fertile seeds. And when these seeds are sown in fertile land, in seconds does this plant grow, this crop grow, does it bear fruit? Like this, your salvation, your nibbana, your enlightenment is just around the corner. If you have understood what he has said, that not being able to associate a Kalyan Mitra or a Satpurusha or noble friend means your Nibbana is far away. If you're not able to respect them, your Nibbana is far away. And how fertile does the land have to be for a rotten seed to grow? It's impossible. If only one normal seed was able to be sown in this land is so fertile that it immediately grows. But if you have rotten seeds, sorry, but it won't grow. So the question is, are you associating the right people? Are you associating noble, Satpurushas, Kalyanamitras? Or are you associating the others? Are you rotten seeds in unfertile lands? Or are you fertile seeds in unfertile land? Or are you the fertile seed in the fertile land? Let's have something to remind ourselves of the great Arhat Gaumputi. So just like whenever you see a lighted candle, you remember Patachar. Now whenever you see a flower, you offer it to the Buddha. Now hopefully you remember the Venerable Gaumputi. You see, the reason why we talk about his past lives is how he made his merit, how all the causes lined for him to become an arahat in this life. Because it may seem so simple. Like if you remember Venerable Kema, just into one sermon and she becomes an arahat. It isn't that easy. Because she's done all the hard work beforehand. She's done the hard work in her life before. All the dhanas, all the merits, all of it was done before. So Venerable Gaumputi became an arahat because he offered a flower. One flower to a Buddha. So you giving Buddha pujas are priceless. Your merits have no price. They are beyond price. So give Buddha puja. Give a Buddha puja. If you don't give it regularly, start. start today. You got the rest of the day. Because each and every time you do it, your causes start to come together for you to become an arahat. If that is your aim, there's your path. Okay then. Let's take a few moments to transfer our merits. Just like the arhat did to the shepherd. Let us transfer our merits as well. And conclude the sermon. Okay. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to the Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha, and pass it down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dharma. Let us also transfer the merits required to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns who represent your local temples, nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer merits to Guru Swami Nansen, all the monks present in this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas. The Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May to the power of the merits, if any of them have been born on the Vipra plane, may they redeem themselves and be born on the Bhusa plane. May to the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supremeness nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us all transfer merits that we will acquire to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, medicine, as well as those who pass in their know-hows extend their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supremeness nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us all take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers, employees, and to those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of their merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, primarily the sacro devas, as well as numerous gods and deities, who committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us all take a moment to transfer merits to our guardian deities, who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill their meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us all take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to those who have been our families, friends, acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, to those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way they could. Let us transfer these merits. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who have lost their lives in war be their friend or foe, rejoicing in the merits required today. Let us also transfer merits to those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and the recent pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been our friends and family to us in the long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to them. May to the power of these merits, if any of them have been born on the Vipra plane, may they redeem themselves and be born on the Bhusa plane. May they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill their meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve, may to the power and blessings of all the merits we acquired throughout the day, we bear to witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of arahats in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits required today, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become Arahat Nvansi, or Arahat Mahin Nvansi, in this very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Noble